So here is our first question. Why is it that when I speak of God or of a religion based on God, you guys seem to declare, oh, I don't believe in God, and certainly not in religion's God. Yet when I speak of the universe, you are eager to hear more. Why do you suppose that is? Well, I guess nobody wants to answer that, so we'll go on. Question is, why do you suppose that is? Especially since there might even be a God, even as religion describes, but there is absolutely no chance whatsoever that a universe exists as science and religion both describe. And you believe that is true. So we have a chicken now, and a bunch of little chickens. The question is this: if I have a chicken, do I have a flock?
Possibly, but not normally, but not by normal definition.
What does that mean? Do I have a flock?
Normal definition. A flock is plural. Normal definition of flock is plural.
So if I have two chickens, then I have a flock.
It's arguable, yes.
Sure.
Well, we recently cut down three trees. Did we cut down a forest? These are trees that were growing next to the house. Could I go and say I cut down a forest next to my house? Is that a valid, just okay?
Not language-wise.
That doesn't normally fit the bill.
Wait a minute. Why not? Who said how many trees equal a forest?
Right. That's true. We have to look in the dictionary. See what the definition of forest is.
I've looked at the dictionary. The forest doesn't count trees for a forest.
What does it say?
I don't know. But it doesn't say how many chickens make a flock either. So what constitutes a flock or a forest?
Or the idea you're trying to get across anyway, right?
I want you to know that I cut down a forest of trees that were too close to the house, and if we had high winds, they might break off branches and hit the house. I cut out down a whole damn forest of three trees.
Okay. Then we either believe you or we don't.
Well, science defines universe as the totality of existing things, including an infinitely great expanse of space conceived of as a whole or turned into one thing. A universe is everything, space included, time included, everything. Then how can science and cacao talk about multiple universes?
Oh, good point.
Well, wait a minute. We've done this by too often by saying that we give all the omnis to God, and then we say, oh, but God is not bad. Well, wait a minute. If he is everything, he's got to be bad. No, he's everything good. He's not bad.
Yeah, that's right, sure.
So, then science declares the universe as all of space and its contents. Everything in existence taken together and looked on as one system, including the space that those things occupy.
Right.
Well, let me ask you one very simple question, and think carefully about this. doesn't that tell you that God did not create the universe? Man created the universe with language.
I think I missed the basis of that. Could you give me that one again?
Well, don't you create a flock? Don't you create a flock with language and say, well, anything more than some number is a flock? And any more than some number constitutes a forest, then hasn't man created the a universe merely by saying it's all things, including space and everything else, and it's omni everything?
Right. Correct.
Well, I just had one question. Didn't man devise a word to describe what he was already experiencing?
But that isn't it possible that what you are experiencing in a flock is one chicken at a time? What you experience in a forest is one tree at a time, and what you experience as the universe is one item at a time. And you do not experience, and there is no way that you can live or relate to a universe as a whole or as a oneness. And yet everything in your life, your struggles to get in harmony with the universe or your struggle against the universe, it's a universe that doesn't exist. Think of it. And you see, the minute they say, and the space is nothing. And as soon as they include space, they're trying to include everything. They speak so much, and we've carried this concept on. And if you think that there is a unified universe per se, as a oneness or a wholeness or as a completeness, then you can fall into the misperception that there must be some grand unified theory of understanding. Maybe it's God. Maybe it's the rules and laws of physics that rule this universe. Everything is interconnected. Everything is a oneness. But what if that's not true? And the universe is only an accumulation of separate and differentnesses, including you.
Would that apply, Roger, to Gaia?
To what?
There is no... Would that apply to Gaia, the term that's used to say this living organism called Earth, that they duped up as Gaia? So there... Then there isn't Gaia either. There is just a collection of pieces and parts.
That's right.
The globe.
That's right. And then we have worded these things, but a flock doesn't exist, a forest doesn't exist, Gaia doesn't exist, and the universe per se doesn't exist. So when you're struggling against all of these things, and you constantly are, or trying to get in harmony with the universe, you're trying to get in harmony with something that doesn't even exist.
Let me ask you, let me carry this too far here, but there is an I that exists.
What?
I'm saying that with a smile. No, I mean, I'm just, is there an individual that exists, an individual truly, an individual...
Sure, there's all...
Like an individual me.
Yes, sure, there is all. Everything is individual.
Okay.
There is no great and... If there is no great and grand oneness of things, that is a language distortion, then we can say that there is no oneness or shouldness or loveliness or rightness and in the universe to be in harmony with or a part of.
Okay.
And in fact is, we could say in this regard, that because we see mathematics here on Earth, there's nothing to say at all that mathematics is true throughout the universe. Every combination of things in the universe creates a different combination and doesn't create then a universe per se. Is anybody interested in this?
Yep, am.
Yep.
The universe then is merely a designation of infinite separate things and is not a separate thing or whole of different dimensions. You think of the universe as, hey, let me ask you a question. If you include space and the universe is expanding, what the hell is the universe expanding into? Is it possible for you to consider everything? Let's eliminate space for a minute and say the expanding universe of things is expanding into space, and space and the universe are entirely different and are not necessarily related at all. Einstein put space and time together. Is it possible to say, for you to say, that there is no time in the universe, that the universe exists in time, expands in time, but time is fully independent of the universe? And yet your whole struggles in life is the presumption of, in one form or another, that a universe does exist, and that you are born into that big existence, and you must deal or get in harmony with or struggle against that universe.
So, as soon as we speak of space, all of a universe, we are speaking of a oneness, do we?
Sure. But even if you don't speak of it, you don't mind yourself other than the universe is a big ball of stuff.
Yes.
Can you consider, it's like taking a handful of sand and throwing it up in the air. Can you consider all the things of the universe merely as particles of sand in space?
It's not hard to imagine, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's not hard to imagine. Quite like
and
that.
Then, yeah. In that regard, then, your universe can consist of whatever independent particles you choose to put together. That you choose.
Yeah.
I can say trees is a forest, or I can say 100 trees is a forest. I put together my own universe. You don't create your own reality of the universe, you actually create your own universe. Is this getting too problematic for anybody to... Well, I can go on to doing other things.
No, it makes sense to me.
So, are you willing to take time and space out of your universe and say that the universe, or my universe, or what universe, there is no the universe, that's just an accumulation of parts in that regard. That it exists in time and space, but time and space are not necessarily a part of my universe, or the universe, or any universe.
Mm-hmm.
You observe so, space, what?
I was going to say that picking that up, that pattern up, then I can look at something that's, let's say, that is referred to as the real estate market. That doesn't exist in the same way, right?
Correct. But you think that it does exist.
Oh, that's a good pickup, yeah.
And because...
What was your example? What market?
Real
estate market.
Oh, okay.
Buying property. And the political market and the religious market or religious teachings. Philosophy doesn't exist. There is no such thing as philosophy. Well, wait, don't just sit there and say, right. What the hell, how does that change your relationship to your life? Don't you understand that the more you look at this, then you understand what I've said all along, you're living a language life that doesn't exist.
Right.
So all these collections, we could enumerate them endlessly here, all these collections that I've made real in my life don't exist.
That's right.
And I try to repeat to something that doesn't exist.
Of course, and you struggle against something that doesn't exist. And it's like Don Quixote tilting against windmills. You can't win. You can't even break even.
Right.
And it all comes
so
from...
So we can only relate to individual pieces.
Individual what?
Pieces. Like, if, you know, if the universe is a collection of stuff, then we can only relate to individual pieces of stuff.
That's right. And the question is, can you not then put the pieces together that you want and call that you?
Oh, I see. Yeah, right. Yeah, I could put, I mean, not to make it too whatever, but you were saying earlier, like you have three trees and you're calling that a forest. I guess I could put a few pieces together and call that me. I could put many, many, many pieces together and call that me.
You know, the word universe has only been around for a few hundred years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Sure, there may be other terms that preceded that, etc. But the question then that comes up, could you handle life a piece at a time and maybe not handle life as a whole?
Concept. What a concept. Never considered it before. But that's really, I guess, all I can do, huh? In fact.
That's in fact what's going on. So could you not then deal with each and every belief, thought, attitude, emotion, word, and action in and of itself and not in that be dealing with a belief of the universe or an action of this or a right action or a wrong action? Deal with each one of these things in each moment of time of your life. And hasn't all of the beliefs and etc. taken that away from you and said, no, don't you understand? There's a goddamn oneness. There's a flock out there. There's a forest out there. And you say, well, I can't see the forest for the trees. There's a universe out there. No, there's not. There's trees in the way and chickens and flocks in the way. There's no forest. There's no universe out there. Can't you deal with the universe? One item, one moment, one spatial place or position at a time?
Yeah.
Roger, can you illustrate that a little more?
I didn't hear what was said.
Can you illustrate that a little more? Dealing with life one piece at a time, can you illustrate that more for me?
Well, I don't know for sure who's talking, and I sure as hell can't hear what
it's
you're saying.
Jennifer.
Oh, hooray! Jennifer, are you talking on your cell phone?
Yes.
It's because it sounds like you're talking from down in the middle of a barrel somewhere on my speaker up here.
Oh.
So enunciate it very carefully or have somebody else repeat it.
I'm asking if you can illustrate that a little more for me.
What do I have to illustrate? Oh, I'm not trying to illustrate this. I'm trying to de-illustrate universe, de-illustrate flock, de-illustrate forest. I can't illustrate it. You and I are one thing. Okay, we're the frigging universe. How about that?
So how do you deal with one thing at a time?
You do. Every moment you only deal with one thing at a time. There is nothing for you other than one thing at a time. There can be, for instance, and I don't want to get into this tonight, we could get into Einstein's special theory of relativity, but boy, did he screw up.
You want to just illustrate what you mean, what your point is there? What?
No, I don't. I don't want to get into that. I don't want to get sidetracked into that, except to say right now that Einstein's special theory of relativity may be correct for inanimate objects or for sentient beings, but you are a special sentient being existing within Einstein's special theory of relativity. Now just leave that alone. Are you willing to be a special being in life that realizes that all these words that we apply to accumulations do not exist as such?
Roger, that almost anything that we put into kind of a label, like a cop, a policeman, if I'm pulled over by a cop, I deal with the individual cop, policeman. I don't deal with the collection called cops.
No, but here's right. What you do. You deal with that individual person relative to, well, goddamn, cops are always so noisy and nosy and messy and etc. So you're still dealing with that cop on a collective basis.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's so one of the bad.
If I want to go.
He's one of the bad guys.
If I want to go hire an architect, I got to deal with that with. An architect, not with the collection of architects.
I was an architect for 50 years. There were times when I couldn't do projects, and people asked me, well, who could I? I never, ever, ever recommended another architect. Because what an architect has done in the past is no necessarily guarantee of what that architect will do or be in the future.
Right.
And we can't say just when I quit the firm partnership that I was in because they wanted to take in an architect as a partner. This was an architect that I wrote a letter to the board and said, do not give this man a license. Now my partners wanted to take him in as a partner. I said, no way, I'm out of here. I will not be. So you have to deal with these things on a specific individual basis. That's the only way you are in fact dealing with these things, is on an individual. Wait a minute. Have you not considered that if everything in the universe is separate and different in that way, there is no universe or oneness or collective in that way, then you can and should deal with each and every thing in each and every morning moment as a separate and different thing?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, Roger, if you ask somebody, so tell me about your life, I'm thinking the first thing, you can't talk about your life as a something. You can only say memories or specific events or a feeling or an idea. It's not a something.
That's right, and so that's what I've said before. Those things, when you ask me to talk about my life, I'll talk about particular events, not as a whole in that regard. And that is the provenance of me, and I deal with that because that's the way I'm living, that's what you're living, and that is your life. Your provenance is your life.
Right. And if they make it even simpler, if you say to somebody, how was your day? You can't even do a concept of day. You can say, well, you'll have an event, a particular to talk about your day.
Well, we can say day, but usually meaning a 24-hour period. So we've limited that in that regard, whereas in most other things, we're all inclusive.
Right, but still, even if you say day, it's limited in that way, but it even still has particulars in and of itself. So you can't even talk about day.
And if you ask me how was my day, I'm going to talk to you about working too hard in the garden or preparing for tonight and all sorts of that. I'm still only going to talk to you about individual things. What in God's name ever thought or believed that there was a collective of any kind in the universe?
Yeah, how's your marriage going? Same principle.
Name anything, and what I preferred to do is, because you can say that relative to these little things, but what I want you to get into your mind is that the universe is stuff expanding in space. It's just separate and individual space. I mean, stuff. There is no universe.
Right.
And you deal with your life and yourself one moment at a time, one event or occurrence at a time. There is no generality.
Right.
Oh, you believe me there? Is that okay, Sally?
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to look at the specifics and the.
Oh, well, then may I ask you a question?
Uh-oh. Yes.
Is there a you?
Oh, that's a good question.
You gotta go there. Wait a minute. Maybe.
Oh, no, there's a collection. It's a collection.
Oh, so you and self don't exist. Except
hey,
that
they asked you that earlier, is there you? You said yes.
What? I didn't hear you. If I said yes, I didn't hear you.
I asked you earlier.
I said I didn't hear you.
I'm getting closer to the phone.
No, I said I didn't hear you ask me that.
Oh,
All right.
So if I said yes, I was not answering that question because the answer is no.
Oh, okay. So you is maybe the generalization that you make by putting all these particulars together.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If the universe doesn't exist, you can't exist. But a particular can exist, and an accumulation of particulars called universe can exist, an accumulation of particulars called you can exist. But you, as a ongoing oneness like the universe or politics, cannot exist, does not exist. That's a word designation and doesn't mean anything. You don't exist.
I got this question for you here then. There seems to be, and I'm not saying this is correct, but there seems to be a desire for some unified or collective something to make all the individual stuff.
No, maybe that's not true. Maybe, in fact, you sense that that's not true, and what you're struggling against is that you and others believe or think that there is a universe and there is a you, and that ought to function in some separate and different way.
Well, certainly I was looking for something to make all the myriad of different little things cohesive or sensible.
So, but you could compose and recompose every minute of your day, yourself, the universe, everything around you. You're free to do that since it's not a oneness. And you are not a oneness. You are free to pick and choose as you ever desire.
Aha.
If there is a label we can put on this accumulation of particular exists, that makes me exist, me in quote.
I'm not sure I understand what you said, Simone, but you put a label on it to accommodate language, and when you then believe the label.
Okay, that might be, yes.
Well, let's see. We'll get into some other time. We'll get into Einstein's special theory of relativity. That's very interesting, by the way. When you really, I'll discuss it from an example that he gave illustrating his theory of special theory of relativity. And then I'll show you how you are special in the universe because you can do something that no one else can do. The problem is you don't do it very often. And the only way we could begin for you to do these things is to release you from thinking that in these whole units which don't exist. The minute you can see that these whole units don't exist, you've unshackled yourself from language. And so when I ask you a question, you can then speak to me in very particular ways. In the environment, whatever the environment might be, it is frequently declared that religion, mysticism, and meditation lead you beyond distinctions and comparisons. But do you understand that distinctions and comparisons are knowing? So we can say then that religion, mysticism, and meditation, instead of saying lead you beyond knowing lead you away from knowing. And they says that also it leads you beyond the illusion that separate things actually exist. Actually, when you get down to it, only separate things exist. The illusion is the fantasy of collectives. Am I making sense to anybody out there? Everybody seems to have gone silent all of a sudden.
Well, I'm listening in a fascinated way.
And unfortunately, this whole concept of religion, mysticism, and holes and all of that has, these false beliefs of this, has been around for centuries of centuries. And you believed it.
Yeah.
Are you beginning to understand in this that when I say oneness is nothingness, I also mean that collectiveness is nothingness as well. There is no thing that you can describe as a force except by describing the individual things. You don't need to get rid of comparisons and distinctions. You need to make more precise distinctions and comparisons to understand yourself in life.
Yeah.
You don't need to quiet your mind with meditation. Wait a minute. Mind-body oneness is the biggest screw-up in the healing professions. We okay?
Yeah.
Them yeah. What are trying to get you to live and understand in one mind-body oneness and all of that. That's a collective that doesn't exist, and it'll just only distort your whole concept of self and life. Oh, well, okay.
No, that makes sense, Roger. If you ask somebody, well, tell me about oneness, they can't talk about it without saying something about things are connected, or we are, or anything. They cannot talk about it without mentioning particulars in some way.
Of course not, because there is no collective of that.
That's right, exactly.
And your whole life is thinking that the universe or this collective or this whole is out there, and I gotta get in harmony with that universe.
Right.
Why, healers say, why, you're in disharmony with everything around you. No wonder you have all these problems.
So do we have a collective that actually exists called healer?
No. That's why I say healers. I don't treat it as a collective. That's an accumulation of individuals. Healers say, healers do.
Right.
And do they?
What?
And do they?
Do they what?
Do they say and do?
Generally, yeah.
You can identify that applies to all of them.
You go and find how many healers believe that the universe exists. And when I say healers, I didn't say all or every. I just said healers because we get a big percentage of people who believe that that's true. And I hate to tell you this, you guys, but if you really, really, really are willing to quit this crap shit, wholeness, oneness of all of this thing that we talk about, and understand what I'm saying, your life will change entirely. And if you understand what I said to Sally, your life and relationship to yourself will change entirely as well.
Yep.
Now, what I have asked before many times and many times given up on it because everybody says, yeah, is connections.
Yep.
If this is true in this relationship, that I can say that relative to the universe, then I can, through connections, say that you are functioning in one way, piece at a time, and think you are functioning in a wholeness, and you're not. And all of the things then that I don't have to deal with you every goddamn belief, thought, attitude, emotion, word, and action, desire, and experience. If I can get you to even see the possibility that the universe, there is no accumulation, there is no all, every one that is separate from the accumulation of the individual, your life and awareness of life will change completely. Now, here is a question. Why would you ever say that you have a great part to do with what happens to you in life, but think that you do not have a great part to play in what happens to you in death? Okay, well, we'll leave that alone for a while. When I told you a couple of stories a couple of weeks ago, our first story, called The Great and Grand News, ended with Lin Yang returning to the monastery declaiming, "Masters, oh masters, please, the greatest news I learned and that I bring to you this day is that, oh, in all things you do in life, always be true to yourself." And in that, the masters eagerly accepted this great and grand news. Why do you suppose that was? Or actually, I guess we might say, actually, what do you suppose this really means? Well, we'll just move along.
No, I missed the story. And what was the question again?
His great grand news was, in all things you do in life, always be true to yourself. And that was accepted by the masters, and he was allowed to return to the monastery. I'm asking you, in everything you do in life, always be true to yourself. What does that mean?
Well, I'm not sure, because if yourself is, if it's not true to you, I don't know if this is a language thing too, it's yourself, I don't know if that's a particular something, or you mean a collective, is it more language specific? Yourself.
What does it mean? You use it all the time. Myself.
I know.
Is there a difference between yourself as one word and yourself as two words?
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, self would be an aspect of you. A two word.
Well,
self, which two words is a, in two words, yourself is an aspect of you. But yourself as one word is what you are.
But you don't exist. There is no you.
You just, I know, this whole thing just kind of blew my mind tonight. I don't know what.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you see what I'm trying to do here? Is I'm trying to get you to free yourself from language.
Roger, this is Danny here with Sally. And the statement that you said, you know, the great and grand truth, in all things, be true to yourself. As I hear it, being a newcomer and trying to grab onto some of this, what I just heard was the word all. I heard the word things. I heard you in place of the word yourself. So I heard a statement that talked entirely about collectives. And the only thing that I could do to rephrase the great and grand truth would be to simply say, be true.
Well, what you're doing is, in that regard, is you're manipulating the words. And what I'm asking you to do, by the way, it says the great and grand news, not the great and grand truth. So that's an important change right off. So what I'm asking you to do is get a picture of, in all things you do, is not a collective. It means that in each and everything that you do, all things does not necessarily mean an all as a collective. It means in all things, or each and everything that you do, always be true to yourself. And now what I'm asking you is, if you are going to be true to yourself, why, what is the self that we're talking about? And if you say...
Self might be the eternal self.
Well, how do I have to say it in order for you to mean that?
Don't you have to choose a particular self? I mean, it has to be a particular, an image or something in particular. It can't be just a general.
Well, wait a minute. Let's take this apart, kind of like he was doing a minute ago. If yourself is one word, then you assume that is you, collective, accumulative, whole, oneness,
right,
which I just said doesn't exist.
Right.
And in that regard, and if I say yourself, then we can kind of like sort of agree with Andrew in that and say, this is a self of yourself. Yourself.
Okay.
And so it is a self that is an aspect of you. Could we then say that yourself is one word means you personally, and that your self could mean your eternal self?
Okay.
My question to you is this. If in life you were always true to, which would you want to be true to, yourself or yourself?
You mean yourself as two words?
Right.
Eternal self.
Okay. Would you rather always be true to your personal self, one word, or your eternal self in that regard, two words?
Probably the two words, eternal.
Well,
because yourself is the two words, self, eternal, because I think that the yourself is a collective which doesn't really exist, that you put it together.
Okay. If you understand that, would it not then behoove you to understand that if you don't know, understand, create, or relate to your eternal self, then you have nothing to be true to?
That's right. Then you try to cause a personal self to be the collective of something that doesn't exist.
So, if your personal self functions by body emotions more than anything else, so does that mean be true to your emotions? Be true to your false beliefs and attitudes and thinks? Or are you willing to look at yourself and project a particular eternal self for you, like the question I asked before, why in God's name do you think that you have a great part to play in your life today and what you do, but you don't believe that you have any control or part to play in what happens after death? Do you not consider, wait a minute, that if you have a part to play after death, then maybe death is not at all what you even think it is?
Right. Well, isn't it the same principle? If something is true always and always, life, the word, even life and the concept of life is a generalization that doesn't really exist except in particulars, then death would also follow that premise. It's not an overall.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you. You see how you see that you can make these connections in that way, so that you can get yourself out of language and into how the universe may be functioning. To even say for the moment that you have a part to play in what happens to you in death, doesn't that omit death as a nothingness?
Right.
But you see, if you use language, you can't go there. But
right.
In getting out of language and using connections to say, if this is what is occurring in the universe, then I can easily say that being in the universe, this works for me in the same way. You don't have to go there and justify that or rationalize that. Get the hell out of language and make the connection.
Right. Yeah, I like that.
That should be everything in your life. If everything is different and separate, then everything can be interconnected however you want it to be interconnected. If everything is a whole like the universe, then you're stuck living the wholeness of these things in a right manner. And you're screwed.
Yeah, right. That feels great.
But you then have the ability to take individual parts and pieces and aspects of the life, every individual part and aspect of the universe, and put that together for yourself in any way you want to. Is that okay?
Yes. Yes.
Well, as I've said before, the only action of the universe that allows that is emergent, and the only action of the universe that screws that away is cause and effect. Because in cause and effect, you have to put it together in the right way, the right form, the within the whole that you desire. And so what you're doing in cause and effect is you're always trying to see what is the whole that I'm trying, or the conclusion, or the result that I'm trying to create. But that's a false thing anyway. We okay with this?
Yep.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yes.
Then I told you an intermediate story about service. That was a guy, I didn't use the guy's name, service in the library. And in that story, it was spoken of that you should create and live a standard, or your standard of self and life. What might that be? In other words, now let's get the hell out of this thinking that there is a gut, collective gut, meaning a general unified theory of all things. Assume there is not a gut, right, compassionate, loving theory of all things that you are to live and all that way. If we talk about a standard of self and life and create a standard of self and life for you to live, we take you away from all this collective, what might that be? Can we say then that you get
always be true?
No, because that's going to give you some real problems. How do you always be true, Simone, without judging?
To yourself, that was the end of.
How can you be true to yourself without judging? Anybody can answer that one. We talk.
Yeah, you're right, because
in causing it's not possible.
What?
In causing it's not possible.
In anything. Maybe I'm asking you, don't just say in causing it's impossible. How do you? Don't tell me what's not possible. What we're doing is to say, if I free you from these collectives or these allnesses or onenesses, if I free you from cause and effect, then tell me how it is possible for you to set a standard of always being true to yourself.
Choosing only to live and be as I would be, as willing to live eternal and have done unto myself.
And you've stated it again in a causal way, in a judgmental way, in an opposing way.
Yeah.
By anger and be willing to accept the result.
Yeah, that's
it. Added the cause effect.
You just follow language and slip right in there with some implied, but well, I didn't say that. Well, no, you didn't. But it's there. By choosing what you would be willing to do and live eternally is in itself a judgment. Now, how do you don't do that? And yet still always be true to yourself.
I didn't use the term choosing.
It doesn't matter. Wait. It doesn't matter whether you use choosing or decision. And you say, if you say even make a decision as to what you would do eternally, you're following the outcome and the conclusion. Don't do that. And if you want to go over this, call me up tomorrow.
Okay.
Because you got to get your head out of that, Patrick.
Well, I said live only. I didn't say choose or decide.
All right, it doesn't say if you say live only, what you would do, you have to make a choice in order to live it.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
That's the seduction of language. It screws you. Okay. That said, you can manipulate that any way you want, and it still keeps you into making a judgmental choice, decision, or life. Now, how do you get out of that? Because the point is, if there is no way out of that dilemma, then hang up. Maybe what I should do right here, let me read you another story and see what you have to say about this story, and then we'll come back to this particular subject. This story is about a father and a son during the Manchu dynasty in China. Wan Peng, the father, is a very wise man. And he was extremely proud of his firstborn son, Zhao, and wanting him to grow up great and strong and able, Wan gave his blessed son a horse. Now, you may not think that this was an important gift, but it was. For at that time, in that part of China, horses were scarce. And those who had horses were noble men who belonged to the privileged class. And though Wan was not, well, he wasn't a ruler and he wasn't part of the elite, he was a leader in his village. And by giving his son a horse, Wan hoped to transfer some of his own power and influence to his son. Well, as a small boy, Zhao could barely hang on to his horse. And where the horse went, Zhao went. And where the horse wouldn't go, well, Zhao didn't go either. Can you think of this as, let's say, the father gave his son language. And where language went, Zhao went. And where language wouldn't go, Zhao couldn't go either.
Right.
And well, Zhao didn't go either, for he seldom went anywhere without his great horse. And we can call the horse language. And when asked if he was the elite class, Zhao often replied, "Well, maybe not so mighty, but I do have a horse." Wan intended to personally raise and educate his son. He wanted to teach him discipline, give him a love of wisdom and service to others, and enlighten him about the gods, and lead him to a purposeful and fulfilling life. And he intended to enliven and enrich his soul. Well, in general, raise him to be the finest son of all, with great privileges and a grand life. But just as he was beginning to instruct Zhao, the prince of the province impressed Wan into service to fight against his several neighboring warriors. And when Wan had to leave his son to grow up the best he could, he had a premonition that he'd not return to see him become a man. Oh, it was a sad, sad day when Wan was dragged away. And dragged he was, for Wan was a gentle man and didn't believe in settling differences by fighting. But if he refused to go, they would cut off his head and enslave his family. Oh, what a terrible choice it was for Wan, as he left his precious son and marched off to war. Wan didn't return from the war. So Zhao grew up without his father and without his father's gentle wisdom and discipline. And being angry that the prince and his warriors had taken his father from him, he constantly struggled against life and did battle with individuals. Oh, he fought against the prince. And he went on raiding parties into neighboring villages and provinces. Thou committed all sorts of atrocities. Oh, dreadful things that people at those times often did to one another. If he decided to hurt people or trample them with his mighty horse, he did that. Wait a minute now. Listen again. If he decided to hurt people or trample them with his mighty language, he did that. And if he felt it was necessary to kill them, well, he did that too. For he lacked his father's restraint and discipline and his true concern for others and his reverence for life. Zhao, boy, sitting tall on his horse, sitting tall on his horse, led his band of men into battle from one province to another, frequently shouting demands at everyone he met. And when the orders were questioned, he often bellowed, "Do it because I tell you to do it. Don't question me. This is your duty." Well, Zhao readily and loudly issued his opinion on all things, especially about what others should or should not do. And his forages into other provinces and other people's lives, well, that continued for many years, during which time he did many brave things, many foolish and inconsiderate things, and unfortunately, many terrible things. But he regretted none of this because, well, Zhao had a horse, or we could say Zhao had a language. One day while campaigning in a neighboring state, Zhao freed several prisoner slaves. Looking down at them from his position high on his horse, he noticed one particular prisoner who was older than the rest, yet he seemed more sure of himself. His spirit hadn't been broken. He even smiled and his eyes sparkled, especially when he looked at Zhao. It was as though he saw clear through Zhao's soul. And, well, maybe he did. "There's something familiar about that man," Zhao quietly said to himself. But he turned and rode away. Until he heard someone call his name, "Zhao!" He quickly reined his horse and turned swiftly, for the horse was accustomed to his quick commands in battle, and the horse had learned to respond immediately. "The horse, like your language, was well trained." "Zhao," he heard it again. "Son, don't you know me? I'm your father, Wan." "Oh, dear son, what a blessed day this is." Zhao could hear the words, but he couldn't quite tell who was calling him. "Surely it must be Ranji, or one of the others," he muttered while looking at his comrades, but no one was nearby. They'd all dismounted under a great shade tree. So Zhao rode on. "Son," the voice repeated, a little louder this time. "Son, it's me, Wan, your father." Only then did Zhao realize that the old man was calling him, just as his father had done so many years ago. "Father? Father!" he shouted as he wheeled his horse. And though he pulled the reins desperately, his horse ran right into the old man, just as he'd been trained to do in battle. The old man was knocked to the ground and nearly trampled, and only Zhao's slight change of direction saved him. Well, you know, the horse was an obedient... the language was an obedient charger. Well, it was quite a different Zhao who sat there that night listening to how his father had been captured in battle and enslaved for years. Wan was forced to work in the mine. Then he'd been sold to a common laborer in a brick factory. In the brick factory, he was always watched. and usually chained, especially at night. All those years, there'd never been a chance to escape and live, because they certainly would have killed him. Oh, he'd seen many others killed for even lesser reason. But regardless of his restrictions and his confinement, Juan lived as a free man and never despaired. But you, son, tell me, what's your life been like? Oh, I so wanted to be with you, to help you and support you. What have you done with your life? Have the gods treated you well? Have you righteously served others? Oh, please tell me, son. Well, Zhao told his father of all the things he had done, the wise and the brave things and the hurtful things, and even the terrible things. Oh, it was quite a story. And his father listened in silence until, well, finally he asked, "Are you proud of yourself and your life, son? Are you well pleased with your accomplishments?" "Of course, I have a horse," Zhao declared boldly. "But why did you do those things?" "Because I had a horse," he insisted. "You mean you did all those things just because you had a horse?" "Well, certainly," Zhao declared righteously. "You gave him to me, and those with a horse are expected to do these things." "Well, son," Juan asked, "do you always do things merely because, well, because you have a horse? Or because you're expected to do them? Shouldn't you discover your own purposes and make your own decisions? Shouldn't you become aware of yourself and your choices in life and then pursue what is right for you and what you truly desire? And if you have a horse, can't you use that to the fullest? Well, and if you don't have a horse, can you not pass things by and do something else?" Zhao was so stunned to hear his father speak this way that he couldn't hardly answer. "Well, yeah, of course, father. But I had a horse, and I was expected to do." "Oh, wait, son," Juan interrupted. "You are a strong lad. Oh, there's no doubt about that. But it seems you have a tendency to justify yourself and continue doing things with great measure and force, no matter what, merely because you have a horse. Whenever I ask you, well, why do you do that? You answer, because I have a horse. Are there no greater reasons than that? Oh, son, is there not a greater purpose for you than that? Are you pleased and satisfied and happy with your life and your actions? Are you satisfied with what you've said and done? Are you fully fulfilling a worthy purpose?" "Oh, father, Zhao answered, "there are many things I've done and many things I've learned since they carried you away. There are many things I've seen and experienced. Oh, well, you know, some were fine and some were terrible. And I felt and known a great deal. And, well, I've lived and done everything as honestly and truthfully as I was able. Yes, I did so. So I guess I judge my life as one lived by a very aware and faithful individual. Though I grieved for you, father. You did all those things merely because, well, as you said, I have a horse. And those with a horse are destined to do things that horsemen do." "Yes, father, that's true. But, son, you had a gift and great skills, and because of them you did things merely because it was your nature or ability to do them. Is that correct?" "Well, yes, father, it is." Well, tell me, son, if you did everything in life only because your nature or another compels you to do them, or you have the opportunity to do them, would you be following the very best and finest or the lesser aspects of yourself? And would these be strengths or weaknesses? Well, Father, you know, as I suppose at times I'd follow the best and finest, and other times, well, I'd follow the worst of myself. But is that so bad? But son, why do things merely because it's your nature to do them? Or maybe because you can even do them? And why do things just because you have the gifts? Or because you have your horse? Or that you have even the opportunity to do them? Why not take your capabilities, declare what you want to do that's right and fine, and use your talents and gifts and awarenesses in properly doing things? But Father, if I were to do that, wouldn't I be judging that my decisions are right? How can I be certain what the gods wanted from me? I'd probably ever declare that I was destined to do these things, or, well, that I was being led by the gods. Would that be right and proper? How would I know? Well, son, you've been given many great gifts in life. Oh, not my horse. You've been given much greater gifts than that. But, oh, well, let me take that back and say that you've created great gifts and developed them. It seems that you have astonished many people with your abilities. Oh, son, these are yours to have and use. So how then would you have them be applied? Would you do great things for your country and for the gods? Or for yourself and others? Would you waste them? Would you give them away simply because, well, because you have a horse? Or would you even be willing to give them away? And if you're willing to offer your special gifts to others, how and in what form would you do that? Well, and for what purpose? Ask yourself that, son. For were you to sincerely, willingly, to give your gifts to others, you'd soon discover you'd not lost them at all, but that in giving to others you gained another gift or capability in return, or another belief and awareness, and a greater understanding of yourself, an understanding you'd have. Well, many horses, son, and even greater and finer gifts and opportunities and talents. And you would have an extraordinary life. By setting yourself on a course of doing things merely because you have a horse, you continue doing the same thing over and over and over, merely because you have a horse. But if you purposefully use your gifts and opportunities for the benefits of others, the results will astound you. And what you will gain will be greater and finer than anything you've discovered in the past. And certainly more wondrous than you've ever imagined. Son, stop doing things in life today merely because you have a horse. But Father, I told you these things expecting great praise for all that I've accomplished by just having the gift of your horse. I've been so sure. Yes, son, I know. But do you have the strength and wisdom to do things for reasons other than because, well, you have a horse? Or because it appears to be your fate or destiny to do them? or maybe because you believe the gods speak to you? Do you have the guidance and awareness and assurance? Well, of course I do, Zhao interrupted. Certainly. Why do you ask, Father? Why do you question me like this? Well, because there are, well, so many wondrous things you can do, son. So why would you ever do things merely because you have a horse? And even if you do things that those who have horses do, couldn't you do them in the way that you choose? Do you understand this? Well, certainly, Father Zhao answered thoughtfully. By doing things that way and living as I choose, I'll know the truth of myself and can live in peace, just as you did in prison. Oh, I'm beginning to see that now. Yeah, it does seem right. Well, then, son, do that. Try it. And things will be grand beyond your greatest imagination. And you'll begin joyfully expressing yourself and having the wondrous things you've held in and denied simply because, well, you had a horse. Do you understand that? Oh, yeah, you know, I really do. But, Father, I haven't been unhappy. Oh, I've sought out and found a great deal of satisfaction and pleasure and some joy, yeah, some real joy. Oh, I've fought, but that's part of life. And I've been brave. Oh, yes, very brave. I'm known for that, my bravery. And I'm admired, and my men respect me. Oh, some may be afraid of me, but that's no matter. It's not important. So, Father, what else is there? I've done all these great things, and I've acquired fine possessions. But you have a purpose and a goal in life, son, a grand purpose and goal. And I know you have a sense and awareness of that, or an image of the goodness and greatness within you. Greatness, of course, I know that, for I have a horse. But, son, Juan interrupted, I'm talking about your greatness with or without a horse. And you have a grandeur, son. You're finer and stronger than most people. You're more impressive in your way than you seem to believe or know about them as they know about themselves. Oh, you've glimpsed these things. Oh, you've seen a small part of it now and then. But you had a horse. And by doing things merely because they were expected of you, or, well, just because you had a natural ability or gift to do them, well, you didn't fulfill the wondrous purpose or the excellence and fineness within you. Why ever would you want to sacrifice such greatness and do ordinary things, oh son, merely because you have a horse? Seeing or being part of the wonder within you will transform your life and attitudes completely. And you'll never give it up, no matter what else others offer you or expect of you. But Father, you gave me the horse. What was I to do? You were to discover and express your true fullness and purpose, son. I gave you the horse. Just as the gods gave you abilities. And they did that too, so you could truly express the majesty within you. Through fulfilling the goals and purpose you sincerely choose in life. And were you to do that, son, could you ever again forsake your own excellence and purpose and magnificence? That's why I gave you the horse. Well, that's about the end of the story, except to say that, well, Zhao continued doing things in life merely because he had a horse, and he lost his true greatness and joy and fulfillment. and he blamed all of his unhappiness on, well, because he had a horse. And it saddened his father so. So how many things are you doing in your life merely because you have an ability to do them? Or like Zhao, you've languaged yourself in that way, and you do these things merely because, well, you have the language way of doing things. What I tried to do today is to show you that language defeats you. And like Zhao, who had a horse and did things only because he had a horse, you continue doing things merely because you have the language to speak of these things and know these things or say these things and do these things in that way, and you live a language life, and you may do all sorts of things just like Zhao, but you will miss out on the true wonder and greatness of yourself. But that's okay. Well, don't stop there. You, like Zhao, are an eternal being living in a temporary environment. And unfortunately, you have mistakenly considered that environment as you. Do you understand that your body is one of those environments? And that you, as an eternal being living in your body, have considered your body as you? And regardless of what others have said for centuries and you believe today, you cannot change yourself in life. You can, however, change the environment you live in. And what I tried to do today, tonight, is to change the environment of the universe and every aspect of yourself that you live in, rather than trying to change you. Since cause and effect are instantaneous, cause and effect, you know, it's like Isaac Newton says that for third law of motion, for every action there is a simultaneous, equal, and opposite reaction, then, since cause and effect are instantaneous, cause and effect is merely the environment of yourself and life and has nothing whatever to do with you, other than you live and thrive in the environment of your mindful actions or strive against them. What you do today does not determine or cause you. Doesn't even determine or cause the course of yourself in life. What you mindfully do today determines the environment of yourself in the moment, and is the continued environment of yourself in life only if carried on. The question that comes to mind in all this, we have said, or I have said, you are what you are doing. What you are doing is the environment of yourself in life. If I then say to you, you are not what you have done, does that make any sense, and why? Well, okay. We'll forget that then. contrary to common, is it, by the way, is there anybody out there? I don't know whether I'm talking to a dead.
Wait. We didn't have a chance to respond.
Well, I waited.
To respond.
I waited.
No.
We were talking, Roger. You couldn't hear us. Hey, so, yeah, I am what I'm doing right now. And in this moment, the self that I am right now has supplanted my previous self. So I'm no longer that which I was doing. Every moment supplants the previous moment. Every self supplants the previous self. So I'm only what I'm doing.
Is that okay?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. It's not a, again, we have to go back. It's not a collective something either.
What else is it? What else is it?
What else
does that do to the environment of your life?
Well, I don't know what that is referring to.
That every moment supplants the prior. That I'm on what I'm doing, not what I've done.
Okay.
So then I guess that the environment of my life is not cluttered with the stuff that I've done. I'm not dragging that around.
What else?
I have to continue it.
What else?
Hang on. I'm thinking. Well, it means I'm a bunch of selves. I'm not just one self.
But there's... Well, Roger, I think that even the word environment is a collective of things.
So what?
Every particular thing you're doing
is you, but what you have done, what you have done is not you,
because that's a collective something, and it's basically a collective memory of things.
I said that it is not you, unless, and it's not your environment unless you continue that. If you continue that in memories or through memories, then you are still doing that. What you are doing now is you. What you have done is not you. Does that not free you from guilt?
Right.
Resentment? Does that not free you from needing forgiveness? Does that not free you from the past deeds that you hang on to and struggle against and try to continue because you think that that's the oneness of the universe and etc.
Right.
But it's a new you in every moment.
Yep.
Now, if you keep doing the same stuff, then that's still you. But if you're doing something entirely different or other, then that's you. And if it's different than other than before, then that is in and of itself your forgiveness.
Yeah.
No amends need be made.
Yeah.
I had a very good friend in Fairbanks. He was the beginning instigator of all this native land claims. And he and I used to argue. I said, if my great-great-great-great-grandfather did something to the Alaska Natives, then let the Alaska Natives take it up with my great-great-great-grandfather. But I don't owe him a damn thing. And I will say that to every Hawaiian that exists. Are you understanding that you have in this then begin to free yourself of this wholeness of time, this going on, this continuation, the all of this, which is so nothing in the first place, and then you are struggling against the universe, the oneness, the wholeness that doesn't even exist. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if you understand this, are you, what I'm trying to bring out in all of this is, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good to discuss 14a, how to bring your eternal self actively in your life today, if you don't have some picture of what's going on. Your eternal self is not a healing, a fixing, a do-over, a forgiveness, or anything at all. If you continue living by cause and effect and beliefs like, well, there is a universe, there is a God, there is an allness, a oneness, a wholeness, and etc., then you are trapped by that entirely. But if you are an individual, living individuals, or individual things at individual times, then you can deal with that. All right. What we've talked about here so far is language. So we can go to number 6 of 14a. Listen with your eyes. Forget about having the ears to hear or listening behind the words. What is important is whether or not you convert everything you hear to images. When I speak to you tonight about a universe that is of individual things, not a big ball like a balloon or a ball that includes all of these things. It's just individual things that exist in time and space. It is, you bypass language because language has called the universe. And if I say universe to you, you can see individual things in space. So that is most of the problem with the language that we use, is the words that we say convey not only what doesn't exist or give you a distorted view of what is, it gives you a false enemies to struggle against. The universe doesn't exist. The wholeness doesn't exist. The oneness doesn't exist. There is no grand unified theory of all things. Wait a minute. That means things like this. Are you willing to accept that regardless of what science says, mathematics is a universal language? That's not true. It doesn't have to be true. It could be, but it doesn't matter in that regard. In a oneness of the universe, then mathematics is true everywhere in the universe. But if the universe we speak of is individual things, then mathematics can be different everywhere. Love has no meaning except in a particular universe. Could be entirely other and different in any other combination of universe. So, I will leave you tonight with only one thing. As far as I've discovered in how the universe works, the only way the universe can function as individual things, not as wholes or as oneness says. The only way it can function in that way is emergently. Emergently takes you out of time and yet keeps you fully involved regardless of what time does or doesn't do. Cause and effect keeps you trapped in time, trapped in space, and trapped in the universe, and struggling against all these things that don't exist in the universe. Okay, well, that's for tonight. Go tell the world the universe doesn't exist and then try to explain it.
Sounds like fun.
Okay.
Thanks, Roger.
Have fun.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Raj.
Bye.